Hello, everybody, and thank you for attending. We're continuing where we left off, and we had finished talking about Capricorn. So there's only two more signs left in the zodiac, and we're going to move on to Aquarius. Now,
Oh.
in front of us, we see Aquarius, and we see that its glyph has these wavy lines. And the word Aqua is the prefix in Aquarius, and most people mistake that for water. And understandably so, because aqua in many of the
Eva,
Spanish.
I'm sorry I can't see your slides. Can you either
Oh.
show screen or
Oh, okay. Show screen. How's that?
thank you.
Is that okay?
Yes.
Great.
It could be a
Great.
little bigger, but
Really,
we
I've
can
got it as
see
big
it.
as I can go.
Can you move the side to the left?
Yes, let me
Just
do
the
that.
side.
Yes, how's that? Is that any better? How's that, guys?
Yes.
Okay,
Yes. Yes.
thank you. I appreciate you bringing that to my attention. That was one thing I had failed to do. So, yes, we're talking about Aquarius, and if we look at the glyph, this one shows wavy lines, and as I have said, the prefix to the word Aquarius is aqua, and in many of the Latin-based languages, aqua or agua in some languages means water. So it's a natural orientation to think of Aquarius as associated with water, and on one level it is, especially if we look at Water of life am I, poured forth for thirsty men, which is the mantram associated with Aquarius. So it does talk about water, and yet it is an air sign, interestingly enough. So these wavy lines can be considered as wavelengths within the atmosphere and how energy travels through air, and it doesn't travel in a straight line. It undulates according to the atmosphere. So these wavy lines can be looked as can be looked at as airwaves. So that's one thing to be said. The other thing is that this particular, and this is not a good depiction of it. Let me get to something else that might show it better. Here we go. There is a person carrying this urn of water that is being poured out for thirsty men. Usually it is described as being on one's shoulder. So here we are in an air sign, and when we think of all the air signs in the zodiac, the three air signs, we have Gemini and the symbols associated with Gemini are the twins, and usually the twins are depicted as one female and one male. Then we have Libra, and Libra is usually depicted as the woman blinded, holding the scales of justice in her hands. And now we come to Aquarius, and it's depicted as a male holding this pot of water on his shoulder and pouring that out. Interesting, if you haven't thought about this before, that all three air signs are the only signs in the entire zodiac that don't use animals as their symbols. All the other signs are associated with animals. Well, that got me to think, why don't we use animals for air signs? And the only thing I could come up with, and this is my own personal take on this, is that air, which is symbolic of the mind, is the path or the route with which we in this Aryan race are supposed to move toward. We're supposed to move toward using our minds. And if we are using our minds, it is showing that we've moved out of the animal kingdom, which is the animal nature within us, into the truly human kingdom. And human, man, is the short form for man, us, manus, which is mind. So these are the three that represent the use of the mind. And we know that soul dwells on the plane of mind. So there's a real connection here between the air signs, man's destiny to use the mind, or humanity, if you want to call that. And even in the word humanity, we have the word man in there, which is a prefix for manas. All of that is telling us more and more how important it is, these air signs. So, you know, are there any questions with what I've kind of talked about a little bit here?
Eva?
Yes.
I just wanted you to know I had heard the same thing in my other studies, that the air signs, it was about the mind, and that's what was the distinction between humanity and animals, was our use of and adapting the mind.
Interesting, because I had not heard that. I thought I came up with something really cool.
Well, you did, and you did, because it is the logical explanation for it. So.
Okay. So anyway, for what it's worth, I offer that so we can consider that. Then if we look at the mantram, or the keynote that is associated with Aquarius, is water of life am I, poured forth for thirsty men. And I always invite people who have not heard these things before to consider, what does it mean to have the waters of life? What are the waters of life? What does that mean to anyone? And pouring forth for thirsty men, what does that mean? Who are the thirsty men? Now, I'm not offering any of my thoughts on this. This is something that every one of us needs to contemplate and sit in meditation with, because when we do, the real answers and the real truth of it all does flow into one's consciousness. So I don't want to give all of that away in this little preamble here. So what do we know about Aquarius? We know that it's an air sign, and we know that it's on the fixed cross. So it is the cross that is associated with all the other fixed signs, and it's the last of them all. When we think of Aquarius, some of the qualities associated with Aquarius is that it's innovative, that it's brilliant and progressive, just like this little slide talks about. And we'll realize that why in a minute, once we look at the ruling planet. It is about freedom loving, can be altruistic and humanitarian. It is often known that many Aquarian people can be cold and aloof. And I think that holds true for most of the air signs. There is this coolness about them. It's not a passionate quality, you see. There isn't the emotion here. This is the mind. So it really goes, supersedes the emotions and goes into the mind. And that can be very mental. One can be very mental, cold, and aloof. Now, the one thing we do know about Aquarians is they can be emotionally very superficial, like almost as if there is no depth to them. They can be eccentric, shocking, rebellious, unusual, offbeat, and unpredictable. And why is that? It has a lot to do with Uranus. Uranus, as has been talked about previously, when it was the esoteric ruler of Libra, again, another air sign, we did mention that it was a transpersonal planet, not personal, and therefore tends towards the universal. So in Aquarius, it's not about the person, but about universal. And hence we hear about bringing new ideas that will change the world, the universal, the world for the better. Uranus is considered to be a planet of the sciences, especially the higher sciences, more abstract ones. And that's why electricity is often associated with Uranus. And we have this little depiction here of electricity. Actually, all these depictions really emphasize the qualities of Uranus, that it is scientific, and therefore you have the idea of the atom there. You have the rebellious individual who is not conservative, who's different, who wears their clothes many times in a way that's well, a little eccentric. And Uranus does not and cannot be contained, cannot be held in, much like lightning. You cannot contain lightning. Lightning will strike. You never know when it's going to strike or where it's going to strike. So therefore, there's something about the freedom that it needs. And therefore, if Uranus is strong in one's chart, it really speaks to freedom and the desire for freedom. We have this person standing on his head, which shows that there's nothing conventional about Uranus. It's different. So those things that Uranus tends to invent are different. One can say that all discoveries can be Uranian in nature, because discoveries are already different than what is the norm. And if we look at when Uranus was discovered in our history, we will note that it was discovered around 1786. And not only was Uranus then discovered as a planet, many other discoveries and inventions happened during that time. There was changes in the life and the evolution of humanity. And at that time, it was very, very profound. Some of the long lists of discoveries just around the time when Uranus was discovered was electricity on both sides of the Atlantic, pasteurization, immunization, the postal service by Dewey, and the steam engine. So we see how discovery is a very good, is a quality that goes along with Uranus. Uranus is oftentimes associated with the planet that is of the mind as well, because in order to have the ability to discover, you got to use your mind. Discoveries, inventions, science, one cannot be emotionally attached to the outcome. So emotions do not play a role here. And so it's interesting that Uranus is the ruling planet, both for two signs that are air signs, one of them being Libra, because it's the esoteric ruler of Libra, and now it's the exoteric, which is the traditional ruler of Aquarius. Uranus, because of its ability to be lighted and coming in like lightning, is intuitive. It's insightful. And when it's in a good aspect to the planet of the mind, and by that I mean Mercury, it brings quickness, because after all, lightning is not slow. It's quick. It brings greater understanding, because more is revealed, and correct analysis to the person who has this good aspect with Mercury in the chart. So here is another depiction. Now, having done the physiognomy with Michael and having studied some facial expressions, if we look at this facial expression right here in the sun, one of the things that Michael has pointed out to us is that many Aquarians have this look of open eyes, this look. That's all I can say. And that's one of the things that we were encouraged to look for in people. And if we did see that, that maybe Aquarius was strong within them. Now, before Uranus up here was discovered, Saturn was considered its ruler. And we see Saturn over here. We see this whole idea of death and Saturn over here. And we have the idea of through Saturn, one goes up to the mountaintop, right? Which we just walked out of the Capricorn sign. So if we follow into Aquarius, it's going up to the mountaintop. And at the top of the mountain is where that particular initiation was reached in Capricorn. Maybe, however, this depiction of this little person here is not walking up to the mountain. Maybe he's coming down from the mountain. We could interpret it that way, because in Capricorn, we know that the individual reaches the mountaintop and turning back on that, you know, glorious sun and everything, he goes down to help and save humanity. And so having reached the mountaintop in that light supernal, the individual, the initiate, turns his back. So lost am I in light supernal, but on that light I turn my back. So this might be the individual walking down from the mountaintop and coming in to the three worlds of men, the physical plane world, and sharing with humanity the waters of life. Any thoughts or any questions thus far? Okay, we're going to move on. So here we are at the esoteric ruler, and it is Jupiter. And we know that Jupiter normally is considered muchness and a lot of and largeness. And here in Aquarius, we think in terms of what it can bring about. And what is it that it can bring about is group consciousness. The entire group. So yes, it's fuller, it's broader than the individual. It takes in the whole. So it can bring about the whole idea of heart to the greater group. And therefore we have the idea of brotherhood, group consciousness, inclusivity, because its magnetic field is so strong that it attracts to it, to others. Hence the idea of brotherhood. And in brotherhood, love and compassion are the prime energies that need to be expressed. So that is the potential available in Aquarius, is the idea of brotherhood and group consciousness. So we can see how within the group, can we imagine that within that group, any new inventions, any new ideas, how they can actually help humanity, how they can bring about this unity that we speak of within humanity. And now we're moving towards that Aquarian age. We're moving towards this idea of brotherhood. Uranus is a seventh ray planet, and we are told that the seventh ray is going to be coming in with Uranus, and hence will bring with it certain qualities associated with the seventh ray, that of the ethers and the etheric vision and the etheric quality. And with that will come the ability to see etherically. We are told that as the Aquarian age grows, the race of man will be born, and the quality of the form will be somewhat elevated or more sensitive to the ethers, to the etheric quality. And that might be in the body itself, the greater sensitivity, or to the ability to see etherically via the eyes. The actual quality of the eyes will be changed. I often think in terms of the ozone layers, and we know how the ozone layer over Australia is very large and brings with it tremendous amount of ultraviolet rays, and that there are other ozone layers, and this ultraviolet speaks to seventh ray. So yes, we have contributed to a lot of this pollution that has brought about perhaps a thinning of the ozone. But I'm wondering what comes first, the chicken or the egg. Is that really what is meant to be, to draw in more of that seventh ray energy, that ultraviolet energy into our atmosphere, into our being, and in that way contribute to the changes that will happen within us? Or is that really just man's doing, you know? It's certainly something to think about. So any comments so far on Aquarius before we move on to Pisces?
I just wanted to say, I've been thinking about what you just said, and you know, I think that's a very good point that you just made. one of the things that happens to us as we get consciously higher and higher and refine our bodies is we acquire more atomic substance and we become more radiatory. You know, it radiates from us, our auras grow. And so it makes sense to me that the same thing would happen, that we would be able to absorb more of the radiation that's coming to us from external sources, including the sun, as that filters through the holes in the ozone or whatever. So thank you. That was very interesting, the point that you just made. And
Well, thank you for your contribution.
I think it's a good.
Yeah, thank you for your contribution. It's something I've thought about for a long time. Not only that, there's another little piece. I don't know the name of the weed, but there's a purple weed that is just becoming so common. If I drive on the highway, all I see is this purple landscape all around me. Whereas years ago, I'm thinking maybe 15 years ago, it was yellow that I saw. Yellow in terms of either dandelions or buttercups or whatever it was. There was a yellow coloring out on the landscape, and now it's become purple, and that too, the purple, the violet, is bringing in a change within the vegetation itself. So I've noticed that as well, and how popular the color pink and purple are amongst humanity. If you look out at a baseball the audience in coming to watch a baseball or a football game, your eye, as it spans over it, and we see this on television as they show the audience, there is this purpley color that comes out, more so than red, and more so than, unless they're wearing the colors of their particular team. But generally, the public tends to wear a lot of purple. Again, I think it's that's the beginnings of that seventh ray energy that is infiltrating into our atmosphere and into our system. And somehow, on some level, we get it. And therefore, it then manifests in how we dress, you know, and the vegetation around us, the flowers, and so on. Okay, unless there are more comments.
Eva, I'm wondering.
Yes.
Can you hear me?
Yes, very well.
Eva, I'm wondering that you've just mentioned this. You know, seeing something differently, you know, I mean, we've given so much negative, you know, information about the ozone layer, but you've turned it into seeing it differently. And it really made me think about what I was reading just recently about some of the nations and who are ruled by Aquarius. And when you have a look at that to see the connections, where brotherhood can be built up between several nations who share the same astrology. Like, I think Great Britain, America has Aquarius as a nation.
Right.
Great Britain, does Germany, is it, or is it the link there through their Leo? I'm just trying to sort of think off the top of my head. And I found this very interesting because in current situations, you know, of the world situations, to have a look at that to see how the various nations like Great Britain and America and even Russia, I'm not sure what signs Russia has, I just can't remember off the top of my head, how they all interact with making very important decisions at the moment.
Well, and, whether... Sorry.
What they need to bring forward as their Aquarian link.
Right.
I think that's what I'm thinking about. How we see things differently. We see a crisis as being like a doomsday thing. But when we look at how many Aquarian signs there are in some of these nations, what they need to bring forward is their ideal of brotherhood in their decision making.
Exactly.
I don't know if I'm getting that across exactly as I'm thinking about it.
Oh, I understand exactly what you're saying. I would just add to that that there is the rays to consider as well. Whether or not Russia has Aquarius strong in its chart, it certainly is a seventh ray nation. And And with Aquarius coming in and Uranus being its ruler, we're going to have so much more seventh ray energy. So it's like, okay, so we have the sign, we have the ray, we have the two working together. So I can see how Russia, America, Russia, United States, Great Britain, how they are all connected. And whether it's Aquarius or whether it's the seventh ray, there is definitely that. And then I have Canada here too. I certainly believe that we are a seventh ray personality nation, even though the Tibetan hasn't given that to us. I will bet my life on that,
I think Russia does have an Aquarius personality.
Okay, so there you go. I know that Canada is Taurian, Taurian personality. I don't remember what he has given us as a more than that, but I know we're Taurus. Taurus is very strong for Canada. Canada has Taurus, and it has a Cancerian birth, so it's Cancer, and it's got Taurus. So Taurus is part of that fixed cross, you know. Anyway, getting a little bit off topic here, but yeah, I can definitely see the connections, and I would actually look into it more. I have to turn to that page that the Tibetan offers us and see the various Aquarian countries and their links. You know, that would be very helpful. Yeah. So thank you for that.
Destiny of the Nations, page 67, has the whole chart there, which is great. Yeah.
Right. Thank you.
Eva?
Yes.
I just also wanted to mention that with Aquarius and Uranus and, you know, the communications and electricity and, you know, for old folks like me, it's very, it's hard sometimes how quickly technology is moving on us.
Mm-hmm.
You know, every year, every 6 months, there's a newer and better phone. There's a newer and better computer. You know, the technology has just moved leaps and bounds on us within the last few years. And with us just moving into this Aquarian age and the seventh ray just beginning to cycle in, I can only see that continuing for a very long time.
And to add to that is that Aquarius conveys the fifth ray. So you have the fifth ray of Aquarius, the second ray of its soul energy, and you have the seventh ray of Uranus coming in. So you have 5, 2, and 7. What more does one need for all this technology and the idea of brotherhood? So how it works so well together, you know, really, really see that. And the fifth ray, as we know, as the Tibetan has told us, will be the ray that will bring about the proof of soul to humanity. So I do think that during the Aquarian age, combining it with the fifth ray, the second ray, and the seventh ray that's coming in through Uranus, Jupiter's also giving us the second ray. During that age, we will prove the existence of the soul. That'll happen during the age of Aquarius.
All things in their time.
Mm-hmm.
It's part of the cycle.
That's right. So we're moving on to the very last of the signs. And this one is called Pisces. And if we look at the glyph, which I always like to look at the glyph, we are seeing the half of the fish. If we were to run a marker down on this side, we would have the other fish, the other side of the fish. And here again, we would have the other side of the fish. So we have two fishes that are joined together and held together. That is very important in understanding the psyche behind the psychology behind the sign Pisces. Pisces, because of the fishes, is associated with water. It is a water sign. And we are told that of all the signs in the zodiac, Pisces is the most sensitive of all the signs. In Pisces, one is immersed in water. And if you can just imagine what it's like to be immersed in water, where are boundaries there? What is it that you're seeing? Everything that you're seeing is through water. And when you see through water, are things really clear? Are things a little, can they be somewhat distorted, somewhat misshaped? So there's a lot of stuff associated with water. It also brings in the whole quality of one's emotions because of the water in it. Pisces is also a mutable sign. And as the word suggests, it's flexible, it's changeable, it can adapt to the to whatever it needs to adapt to. So aside from the emotions and the sensitivity is not only to its itself and its own feelings, because in being immersed in the water and not having boundaries, it picks up all this emotional energy that's all around it. And it's very hard to know what is mine and what is yours. Where is that boundary? Where is that division between my energy and your energy? And it's very hard for Pisceans to sometimes handle life because of that. There's this real strong sensitivity to the impressions that are received, and the impressions land in the form, in the body, because of the emotional quality associated with it. And so what else does that bring about? Well, if we look at some of the words associated here with Pisces, we see that there is because of the sensitivity, there is the sympathy to others, and the ability to understand what another person might be experiencing. So hence the sensitivity to others' feelings. Because of that, Pisces wants to help. Pisces is always there to try to help somebody else. They understand that someone else might be going through their own pain, because for Pisces, it is said that, well, there's a native Indian expression, I die daily. And that could very easily apply to Pisces. To live as a Piscean is not an easy thing because of that sensitivity to impression. I'm repeating that again and again because it is so. There is a real strong sensitivity. That can bring about, as we said, the sympathy. It can bring about compassion, being charitable. It's very much associated with the sixth ray, and hence we have these qualities of charity, these qualities of sacrifice associated with Pisces. And it can be a very creative sign. Creative, again, to the energies around, because of the energies around it, it brings about this creativity. And we see this coming out in dance. We see it coming out in music, in artistry. So there's an awful lot of creative people with a strong Pisces who find themselves in the arts, whether it's on stage, whether it's creating music, whether it's dancing. Since Pisces rules the feet, and we've just moved down from the top, which was the head, that was Aries, all the way down through the human form, down to ruling the feet, which is Pisces, it oftentimes denotes either the ability to dance, the ability to use the feet in a very creative way, or the opposite can be true. People have difficulty with their feet. You know, sometimes they have feet and it's an impediment for them. But that's a whole other area. So water is very much associated with not having the clarity, and hence the word dreaminess can come in there. Vagueness can come in there. When you're not that clear, and when you're not necessarily grounded, which in Pisces one may not necessarily be grounded, impracticality can move in there. So one can be impractical, and because of the suffering that many Pisceans endure, again, the bombardment and overwhelm of the energies, the sensitivity to impression, it can lead to wanting to escape that kind of suffering. And so escapism is very much associated with Pisces. And that escapism can be in a variety of different ways. We know narcotics is ruled by Pisces, or maybe even Neptune. Alcohol, any kind of escapism could be seen with Piscean type people. And oftentimes misunderstood is another quality. Now, we have here Neptune as its ruler. And Neptune is more about humanity. And the Tibetan offers us that Jupiter is the exoteric ruler of Pisces. So Jupiter is more about the individual, while humanity's ruler is more Neptune. And because of the fact that both rulers are being used, we need to consider both. We can't consider one without considering the other. So what would Jupiter do? Jupiter would just enlarge and make more of whatever one is already experiencing. So we can see the kinds of problems if one is extremely sensitive to impression, what Jupiter can do there. It can enlarge that and make more of that. More sensitivity, more feeling overwhelmed, etc., etc. And how is Neptune going to demonstrate through Pisces? Well, Neptune, we know, is the lord of the sea, the lord of the waters. So again, you have Neptune, which is waters, associated with Pisces, which is waters. You got the two waters coming together, which can lead to confusion, not seeing things clearly. It can lead to escapism, to illusion. Again, there is the perception that is not that clear. So I have all these words here. We can go through them, but I think by now most of them you've already heard before when we dealt with Neptune as the ruler of another water sign, being Cancer. So we have it can devitalize, really sap you of energy, and we all know what that's like on a humid day. On a very humid day, that energy that one feels is literally sapped out of oneself. It's devitalizing. Compassion, because of the strong sixth ray to Neptune and the second ray, we see a combination of words here that can be either sixth ray words or second ray words, such as the creativeness of the imagination. Imagination is usually associated with the astral plane, and that creative imagination is very Neptunian. The transcendent, which is what Neptune is all about. It's not about what is in matter, it's really about what's outside of matter. So it transcends what is in matter. And hence the ideal is very strong. We see all these sixth ray words here. Visionary, prophetic, a universal love would be more second ray. Compassion would be more second ray. Trust is definitely a sixth ray word, as is faith. Intuition, well, that would come about because of the water quality. Water tends to either be, one can tend to be either intuitive based on the emotional nature, or intuitive based on soul, or even higher based on the Buddhic quality. So the intuition, Neptune is very much associated with the emotions. It's associated with the universal love, which is of the soul, and it's associated with Buddhi, which is a pure, pure love or reason. That brings about understanding. So far we've looked at the exoteric ruler. It can bring about psychism too. I haven't mentioned that yet. And all the water signs can bring about the ability to be psychic, because most psychism comes about through one's ability to see and feel astrally. One can read another person's wish life, and that wish life is usually an astral thing. We're going to move on, unless there are any comments or questions, actually, before we do move on. Okay, so we move on. Okay, we're going to move on to the esoteric ruler, and the esoteric ruler is Pluto. And who would think Pluto, which is a first-rate planet, being so associated with these qualities of gentleness that we all sense in Neptune and in Jupiter. And yet, it's a very needed energy. In the early stages, we see that band that holds the two fishes together represents the soul being the prisoner to the personality. In the later stages, it represents that the soul then becomes the strong one, and the personality then is becomes, so to speak, the prisoner of the soul. In other words, that the soul is the dominant one. Here, I hope that this depiction shows almost that these ties have been loosened, so that the fishes are then free. They are free for the personality to be the personality and the soul to be the soul. But then you have the whole idea of the soul-infused personality. But freedom is very much associated here. No longer prisoners of anything, actually. So let's look at Pluto and how important Pluto is. Remember I said I die daily is a good phrase that can be used for Pisces. Well, what will Pluto give Pisces? It certainly would give Pisces tremendous amount of courage. Courage to get through. Courage to bring about the necessary death to the personality, so to speak, symbolically. Death to the personality symbolically means that the soul is the dominant one, not the personality. So there's a certain kind of ability to bring death to the form. It is associated oftentimes with resurrection, Pluto. So it's like lifting the dead within us to life. Anubis was the Egyptian, in Egyptian mythology, had the responsibility of leading the would-be initiate, or even the deceased, the dead one, because Pluto is associated with death, into the underworld and into the chamber of initiation, where the individual's fitness for further spiritual progress is evaluated, and where he will either pass the test of being weighed in the scales of justice or will have to return to incarnation for further education. So, you know, we can almost see how this is the end of needing to be reborn yet again. In other words, incarnation can be pretty well considered finished if one goes through the steps necessary to reach that level. So in the fourth initiation, we know that rebirth is not necessary. Well, Pluto can bring that about in Pisces. Pisces is associated with the Savior, with the Christ, or even Jesus. And he's symbolic of saving humanity, saving them from the sins that kept them bound to the personality and to the earth. And it is the sign of the Savior. But that is only when the life has reached that level. Too many people born in Pisces think that, oh, well, if I'm born in Pisces, well, then I'm not going to reincarnate anymore. I have reached liberation and I'm off the wheel of rebirth. And that is not the case. That is the journey that one goes through the zodiac, with Pisces ending of that journey. But that doesn't mean for 1 minute that just because one is born in Pisces that it's the end of one's incarnational lives. But Pluto is a very necessary energy for that kind of living that the Piscean does, be able to deal with all those bombardments of energy, the being able to cut it off, which is a very strong first ray energy, to be able to withdraw from that, to cut it off, to know what is mine, what is not mine. And that takes a Plutonian quality. It's not usually the Piscean energy or the Neptunian and Jupiterian energy moving through Pisces that does that. Comments, questions? Okay. So we had been looking at a flat chart, and we saw that we were moving in this anti-clockwise direction around the zodiac. And we started with Aries, and we ended the zodiac with Pisces. So in every one of these situations, the opposite plays a very important role. These lines are known as cusps. And if we look at the division within a flat chart, we see that there are 12 divisions. They really, each one of them represent a sign, because there are 12 signs in our zodiac. And the line that separates one from another is known as a cusp, and it creates sort of a boundary, I guess one would say, between one area and the other area. And these are called houses. These areas are called houses. And in order to understand what these houses or fields of energy or the environment is all about, all one needs to know is the sign that normally would dwell within that environment. And the sign that shows up on the cusp is the one that is referenced and the one that then rules that particular house or environment or mansion. Sometimes it's referred to as a mansion. So we know, for example, if Aries rules the first house, it has a lot to do with beginnings and with me and I and my identity, since this is number one. Right? If Taurus rules the second house, then we know that it is about one's values because, you know, Venus was the ruler of Taurus, and Venus is a lot about values and what one values and in every area, one's resources. Resources can be your own resources or the resources around you. And this is just a very quick way to approach it. I could easily go into a chart that I have with all the qualities associated with the houses, but that would require memorization, and it's not necessary. If you just know the qualities or the characteristics associated with the sign that rules that house, then you know a lot about that house. We have Gemini for the third, and Gemini was very much associated with Mercury, and Mercury is about the mind. So this house has to do with the mind, with learnings, and learnings that you do when you're young, you know, the learnings that you do. This sign had to do with twins. So it also would include your siblings, your brothers, your sisters. And we see how we get to understanding that field in which we are immersed in. Fourth house is ruled by Cancer. And Cancer, if you remember, had to do with creating an environment that was safe, you know, and closed. And so it has to do a lot with the home or the ashram, if we extend that a little further, and the way in which we live within the home. It has to do with our heritage, the traditions that we have, and what we in the home have learned as a result of those traditions. Our home environment is just an excellent way to look at the fourth house. The fifth house, which is ruled by Leo, remember, Leo kind of stands up and roars and is above the crowd, if you remember. So Leo is about me. It's about the individual. It's about one's identity and the development of that identity. Hence the creativity that one can produce as a result of now identifying as above the crowd. In Virgo is about the virgin and the gestation period and giving birth to the Christ child. So in Virgo, it has a lot to do with purification, and purification ends up looking like hygiene of all kinds, looking after the foods we eat. So there's digestion involved here. There is, believe it or not, it's the service that we give and that we do. And that can also take us into the workplace, because usually it's supposed to be that the work we do is a form of service that we give to humanity. So it has to do with service and the love that we give to other creatures like our pets and the animals that we love. We come to Libra. Libra rules the seventh house. So everything below the horizon here had to do with the personal self. Everything above the horizon has to do with others. And with Libra, it's no longer about me. It's about me and another. So it's about relationships. And that relationships, you know, usually have to do with partners, partners in marriage, partners at work. Relationships. Are your relationships good, or have you got enemies? This could also relate to open enemies that you might have. Scorpio is the ruler of the next house or mansion, and Scorpio is about delving deep into the unknown. And hence, this house has a lot to do with research, with the ability to go deep. And in going deep, you might experience or know something about yourself that you didn't know before. And hence, it brings about transformation. So this house is very much associated with transformation, rebirth, coming anew, because it is ruled by Pluto, as far as humanity is concerned. It also is the opposite to Taurus, and Taurus is about values, but it's about one's own values. In Scorpio, because you're now dealing with the others, it's about how you handle others' money or inheritance that you have received from others. And then you come to Sagittarius, which rules the ninth house. And Sagittarius is about the goal and higher vision. This has a lot to do about higher what? Higher learning, higher teachings, higher math, higher things takes in philosophy, religion, education of a higher nature. Many people with a strong Sagittarius, which is ruled by Jupiter, are very good teachers. And teachers bring those ideals, which Sagittarius sees, to humanity. It has a lot to do also with adventures. And it was ruled by the horse, if you remember, whether it was the white knight sitting on his horse, which is more the updated version of the centaur, which was more of the archaic version. It is about adventure and about seeking fun and having fun. Jupiter, you know, Jupiter is very jovial. So this is the house of traveling and adventure and sports. Then we come to Capricorn, and Capricorn is ruled by Saturn. Capricorn is ambition. Capricorn is wanting to rise to the top and wanting to succeed. And hence you have the desire to reach that top. And so therefore ambition and success is very important. And therefore it takes in your career. What is it that you've accomplished? So your career and your profession play an important role here in looking at this house. And since this was about the home, this is about the workplace and what you are doing outside of the home. The 11th house, which was ruled by Aquarius, was about the mind and therefore leading to brotherhood. So there's a lot here that has to do with others and groups that one finds themselves associated with. So groups play a very important role. There's a superficiality still associated with Aquarius. So there's the many groups, all the various groups that one is associated with. It's about others, whereas Leo was about the self. Its opposite was Leo. Leo was about the self and one's identity. This is about others in the group that one finds themselves associated with. And then we have Pisces. And in Pisces, which is the opposite of Virgo, here, we have the idea of hidden. This is very hidden, because remember, in the water, we don't really see what's doing in the waters. So this is a hidden house and has to do with institutions, with hidden works, retreats, retreating to do one's work. It has to do with, this was about healing and purification of the self. This is the opposite. This is about hospitals, still healing, but it's about hospitals. You see, it has to do with others. So all institutions and hospitals are associated here, and retreats and away from, needing to get away from others to be on their own in a place that's secluded and hidden. So that gives you an overview of how to look at the houses. And I didn't spend too much time talking about the opposites, but always there is the opposite that plays a very important role. And one needs to learn to balance the opposite quality of whatever sign one is considering or one is looking at with their luminaries. Okay, so I think that's all I have for the moment on the zodiac itself. Any comments thus far? Any questions?
Hi, Eva. I would like to add that not only is it the sign opposites that are important, but the environment opposites too, so the house opposites. Mm-hmm. So it's not just Gemini and Sagittarius, it would be the third and ninth axis that would be an important one to keep in mind and to keep balanced. And I think one of the best examples of that is the fourth and tenth axis, the home and the career, or the first and seventh axis, the self and the significant other. So mm-hmm. In as with anything that we find, balance of the opposites is extremely important.
Absolutely. Agreed. Yeah, very important. And, you know, I don't think that's stressed enough, the need for working with the opposites. I know I hear people talk about them occasionally, but I don't think it's sufficiently stressed.
I think they know they have to do it. You know, we're all told we have to balance the pairs of opposites, but in day-to-day reality, what does that mean?
Right.
Well, it means just this. It means always looking at everything as if you're on a teeter-totter, and it has to be balanced from both sides.
Correct. Very good. Thank you. Any other thoughts? So we've covered the entire zodiac, and go ahead.
Talking about the pairs of opposites, I started working with this only just a couple of years ago, actually, and I found it very valuable from the standpoint of my Aries ascendant when I had to work out how that was to be balanced by the Libra mm-hmm. and the you know, as you know, Aries wants to be the leader, but can be very dominant. But the Aries brings in the diplomacy and the working with and not being dominating. It's being cooperative. And that, to me, helped me a great deal to see, you know, when one needed the other.
That's a very excellent way of looking at it. You see, for me, it's the exact opposite. With five planets in Libra, including my sun, there is so much Libra to me, and hence I have had to work on incorporating the first ray of Aries and being a little stronger in some areas, being a little bit more assertive, and sometimes saying it like it is, which has been a very difficult lesson because Librans are pleasers. And Librans do not want confrontation, and they don't want to upset the apple cart. You know, they like the status quo. So they avoid, you know, that first rayness of that assertion that is so necessary. So I really understand your need to work with Libra and my need to work with Aries.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Helps a great deal, yeah.
Yeah, it definitely does. And I constantly remind myself, you know, that I need to use a little bit more of the Aries qualities. Anyway, Yeah, so that's how it is. And some people are fortunate that they have opposites in their charts, and therefore it's just a matter of balancing it, you know, and working with them both.
Not all of us are so lucky.
Yeah.
Some of us have everything in the bottom half or the top half, and there's nothing opposite there.
That's right. I have everything in the bottom half. Don't I know that? I know. Yeah. So, you know, you're handed a chart because that's what your footprint is, and that's what you need to work with in this incarnation. So we're all given opportunity to work with whatever we receive. And you know what? I've come to the conclusion after looking at many, many charts and speaking with people and reading their charts. There's no such thing as a better chart or a worse chart. Because if you have, you know, we haven't talked about aspects and we haven't talked about the dynamics created in the relationship within the chart. But if you have nothing but squares and oppositions, one would say, oh, what a difficult life it is. But it's a life of opportunity and a life of growth. If you have a lot of easy flow of energy in trines and sextiles, then it's a lot, it could be a life of stagnation and a life where you don't move forward. And therefore you need to be hit over the head with a 2x4 in order to have a crisis and maybe learn from the crisis. So there's no such thing as a better or a worse chart. We're handed what we're handed because that's what we need.
I think I would agree there, and sometimes I think about a chart with its challenges, but I also think about what we need to look for is the support we get from those from the chart that helps us rise above those challenges. And I often think of that saying in the Bible that says, "You are never tested beyond your capacity or beyond your limits." And
Right.
that makes me think of our astrology chart in that we are given these challenges, but we're not tested beyond what we can draw in as strengths and courage to make those changes as
Right.
opportunities. Yeah.
You know, soul gives us what it really understands we can handle. You know, if we couldn't handle, we wouldn't be given it. And some do better with it than others, obviously, but we don't get meted out to us what we cannot deal with. In spite of many times when we're immersed in the crisis of it all, we don't think we can. Soul is very smart and doesn't give us what we cannot deal with. Now, in the next section of this webinar, I'd like to tell you a story. And the story is the prodigal son and his journey through the zodiac. So just sit back and listen. And in a way, it's too bad that I can't act this out in front of you. Not that I'm such a good actress, but when I've done this in front of a group of people, I do emote a little bit more. So hopefully I can do that with my voice. So here's the story of the prodigal son. And in the Bible story of the prodigal son of the father, we've heard the story before. The father who had two sons and he lived in the solar realms. One brother was industrious and was always out in the field taking care of the sheep and the cattle and working very diligently. The other son liked his space and his time, and he would go and do the bare minimum of work. But any time he could get out and go by the river and not have to tend to his sheep, he would do that, for that was the line of least resistance for him. Now I'm going to use the pronoun he as I speak of the prodigal son, because the word son is a masculine. But in your own minds, you know you can always substitute the she. So, you know, we can be a little political correct here. This young individual, this young man, said that he felt there was something lacking for him. He felt he had to go out into the world and seek and find what it was that he was missing. The son said to the father, "Give me what's due me, because I want to experience the world. Being in these solar realms is fine, but I can't experience the senses. I can't feel, I can't make love, and so on. So his father gave him his love, and the son went out into the world. He experienced all that there was to experience, lust, love, and all the pleasures of the world, as well as others, being humanity. And coming home, his father was so grateful to see him that he went out and met him part way. He slaughtered the fatted calf and celebrated. Although the son was poor monetarily when he came home, he was much richer than when he left, for now he had garnered all the experiences of the world and was so much wiser. The astrological signs show us his journey and the experiences that he had in the world. So in order for him to experience life, he entered into matter. We are all similar on this wheel, for we are born with a sun sign. Metaphorically, before our time is up, every one of us will pass through all the strengths and all the weaknesses of every sign. So I'm going to trace the journey through the zodiac for each and every one of us in this prodigal sun, which is the pilgrim on the way. So the sun, being in the solar realms, tumbles down to earth. Aries is the first sign of the zodiac. In Aries, he is born. He moves into matter, full of fire. I am going forward. Aries is always about movement, about forward. It is always about starting something. In Aries, the prodigal son started his journey. Here he's full of enthusiasm, full of passion, of fire and zeal. Head first, he rushes and begins all sorts of endeavors, and then finds himself in the matter of the earth. So here in Taurus, the matter of the earth, he is filled with the desires of the earth. Sensuality, sexuality, his senses attract him to everything. He satiates all his appetites. He goes for and attracts all that fulfills him, materiality and things. Then he finds himself in Gemini. In order to acquire what he needs, he has to be very adaptable, very versatile, and has to communicate his needs. He finds himself in discussion with people. All kinds of superficial thoughts fill his mind. He flits from one group to another. "Talk to me about this," he would say. "Let's talk about that." He finds himself in caravans, going from here to there, trying to capture the knowledge that he thinks is available. But here in Gemini, they are also surface. There is no depth. Superficiality and sensuality are just not enough. He knows he has to have a family. There must be a mother and a father. He thinks like everyone else, and like the masses, his caring and nurturing extends to his immediate family. He nurtures, and he finds through Cancer that he is nurtured as well. Through that nurturing, he finds something intrinsic in himself that he can really stand in and be filled with. And then he says, "I don't want to be part of the masses where everyone is thinking the same thing, doing the same thing. I want to be an individual. I want to stand above the crowd." And so he moves into Leo, where he can express his individuality and shine for himself. Here, he begins to develop his personality. He becomes Leo, the king of his home. He stands with presence and pride and looks back at all his accomplishments in the other signs so he can say, "That's me." He knows he can rule. He can dominate and control and have everyone orbiting around him. But after a time, something starts to click in him, and he sees that even that is not satisfying all his desires. So again, he moves away into the world of matter and finds that he can fix things and manipulate thought. In Virgo, he begins to harvest some of the wealth that he has been doing all along. He seems to know intrinsically what matter is all about. He moves on. He moves into Libra, into mediation. Here, people are conflicted. He wants to help mediate differences, but at the same time, he wants to be liked. So he does and says things that won't upset others, won't upset the apple cart. Choices have to be made, and he finds himself choosing to maintain the status quo. Those desires that he initially left the home front for are still not being satisfied. So he moves into depression. And in Scorpio, he falls into very deep waters. In his depression, he becomes mean and spiteful and devious. For a long time, he stays in darkness. He realizes that through deception and manipulation and knowing what another one is feeling, he can control his environment to serve his own ends. Finally, he lifts himself up and out of the darkness and just travels everywhere. He doesn't do anything but just travel, wander, and see the world. In Sagittarius, he becomes a seeker, looking to gratify and make himself happy. But this doesn't do it either. Along his travels, he seeks guidance from those whom he thinks can teach him something. He tries to emulate those that are successful. So he thinks that by climbing to the top, his desires will be met. So he climbs the mountain of achievement in Capricorn. It is a really hard journey. His ambition pushes him on, in spite of the fact that he starves and he cuts his feet and even steps on others that might be in his way. He finally gets to the top just to find out that the people at the top do not have the answers either. But his achieved success is also not satisfying him anymore. So he turns around, he goes down, depressed, to the groups of all men, looking for the teacher in Aquarius. He needs to be filled, for his initial desire is still not satisfied. He goes from one group to another to be fulfilled. This too doesn't work. The last step for him is in Pisces. Here, he sinks into the waters, into the subconscious, and almost dies. In a dream state, he hears, "Get up and go forth." In his dream, he sees himself whirling and twirling, and finally, he realizes what he's been doing all along. He's been doing matter, and only matter. His consciousness was not filled. His consciousness had not grown. The reason he had left home in the first place was to expand and grow. Consciousness had to be filled, and not just the satiation of the flesh. So he goes round and around and around again and again, and he stops, and again he hears a voice, "Go forth." And so he picks himself out of Pisces and moves into Aries again. He realizes that his desires had been his folly. Now he must think. He realized that it is through his mind and the new ideas that he can pioneer and initiate things of worth, so he moves forward through Aries, which brings him to the matter of Taurus, where he can take stock and know what is of true value and what is not. He realizes it's not about everything I can gather and amass. Here in Taurus, even matter can become illumined. And so in Taurus, he begins not only to illumine his mind, but he spreads the idea of appreciation and value to others. Through appreciation, he begins to understand that the superficiality of discussion goes nowhere. Instead, that in discussion, you need two. In Gemini, there are two. We are brothers and sisters, and we are the family of man. You and I are but reflections of each other, a reflection of our duality. In Gemini, he puts forward to the world and to himself what that duality represents. It is the personality and the soul. Having realized the concept of duality, he could now envelop himself and take a sabbatical. He could develop all his sensitivity and become the sensitive nature of all humanity. So instead of his concerns and protection for only his immediate family, he becomes a part of the family of man. In Cancer, he understands the roots and the traditions of all peoples, not just his own. Having experienced and expressed these, now he could move into his own individuality, not with pride and arrogance, but with a magnanimous heart of the shared consciousness of a shared identity in Leo, of one within the many. He's no longer filled with pride, but instead a vivid and generous heart. This Leo could move forward not in strut, but in radiance. In radiance, this prodigal would enter again into those matters of life, but this time radiating that which has been birthed in the cave of the heart, the Christ principle, the love principle, his soul aspect. He could radiate it out to people so that they could see that their ideas and manipulation of matters are just that. Come and create the vessel, he would say, so that the Christ in you can be birthed, the hope and glory can come through. Having gathered the harvest in Virgo and allowing the seed to gestate, he moves into Libra. Here, he could look eye to eye into the face of all that he is in relationship with and see that he need not give all that he is in self-abnegation, which is a big part of Libra. To give, always to give and give and not to receive, this is not heart to heart. True mediation, true diplomacy is the way to true equilibrium, to balance. Not by tipping the scales of one person's needs over another person's needs. So in Libra, he begins to move in right relations. In dealing with that, one deals with one of the primary psychological dilemmas of all of humanity, and that is our illusions. Our illusions of our needs, our glamours of who we are. So in seeing that we are equal in Libra, he can now move into Scorpio in the realms of illusions and glamours and still and calm the waters. Through the light of triumph and triumphant identity, he can say, lift yourself up out of your illusions and glamours as I have lifted myself. I have done that by looking up to see what was above me And I have done that by rising so that I could see what was below. And standing in the middle as a fixed current, I have triumphed, and all can triumph in Scorpio. He becomes the warrior in Scorpio, fighting for the battle, for himself, for his self, soul that he is. He had to fight himself, his personality, in order to know that he is soul. Having triumphed in that battle for soul, he sees the vision of what he is inside, what is his wholeness, what is his source, what is his soul. Sagittarius is the vision. Sagittarius is one-pointed orientation towards the goal of the heights. He starts to move headlong towards that goal of soul infusion. He then goes forward to all the world with the voice of eloquence and with desire for upliftment in his heart. He travels in Sagittarius and teaches the one life, the one teaching, that we are one. With that teaching, he doesn't need to climb the mountain, for the mountain is inside him. And in Capricorn, the whole process of revelation occurs to him. All his ambition mounts to the realization of the one goal, which is the unity of all of life. In Capricorn, he achieves the goal, the Mount of Transfiguration, where he becomes a soul-infused individual. Having realized, having received, he then again removes himself from himself and doesn't bask in his glory, but he goes out into the greater world where he can bring these insights and the intuitive revelation of true group relationship. And so, in Aquarius, he brings reform to the world. All the inventions that can bring us all together as a global humanity, all the reforms and the revelations born of the heart and of the clear mind, which he knows from having been on that mountaintop and having seen the great vision. He brings revolution to concepts. He brings inventions to change the way people live so that they can live less hampered by the matter aspect and more in realms of the intuition and greater consciousness. He truly pours forth the waters of life for thirsty men. Until finally, having given all that, he realizes that there is one more step that must be done, and that is give even of himself. So in Pisces, he realizes that although we are all one, the only way to truly express that is to give oneself fully to that understanding. And so in Pisces, he becomes the world savior, negating himself by being fully himself. He turns towards the needy in order to save them. He enters fully into the stream of consciousness that is greater than his own, the stream of the planetary life, the Father, the coming home, where his identity melts into that great glory. That is the coming home of the prodigal son. That is the great festivity at the end of the biblical story. Having come home, having tasted all of life, and then having tasted and experienced, the prodigal had life to give back. That's the journey that all of us do on the great wheel of life called the zodiac. We don't all do it in a sequential manner, but we have evolved and evolved. And we are now still in the process of evolving. That's it. Thank you, guys.
Thank you. That was great.
Thank you. Thank you. Yeah.
Thank you, Eva.
You're welcome. So that's it. I think that the next astrology webinar that I will give will be on the crosses, you know, so that the turning of the wheel. So we go on the clockwise wheel and the anti-clockwise wheel, because there is a lot of confusion for a lot of students with that. And I have a pretty good presentation that I think clears that up a lot. And that will be probably the next one.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Okay, so thank you all for attending. And I hope somebody does listen to this at some point, you know.
I'm sure they will. Yeah. It was wonderful. Eva, thank you very
much.
Yeah,
the whole series was really good, and I look forward to your one on the crosses. So thank you.
And thank you for attending and helping me out. This was an easy one to be able to. I'm going to just a minute.